All right, here we go. It's podcasting time. Colin Thomas is here from Essential Maintenance, and We Will Fix It Dubai. We're at the Rove Hotel downtown Dubai in the podcast studio, and it is DIY time. We're going to sort you out. We're going to start with mosquitoes, and we've got all sorts of things to help you with and more. You know, even Bob Vila listens to our program because, you know, the tool time guy needs tips from Colin Thomas. So here we go. Let's do it.
Well, you've just thrown me straight away there, James. I don't think I've got mosquitoes in my notes.
Oh, no, no. So
you've just gone curveball straight off the bat.
We have. So anyone who's wondering how this show works, we got a whole bunch of notes, put them all together. I send them off to Colin in a WhatsApp file. Although they are in a Google Doc, but I send them to you WhatsApp. And then we progress to work our way through. You add a whole bunch of stuff as well.
Yes.
I compile it, and away we go and get going. Things stay on the list. And this is one of those moments.
What, from 6 months ago? And you thought you'd just drag it out now?
I kept it on the bottom.
Well, it's lucky. It's not on the bottom. You kept that on the bottom. How far down? I mean, to be fair, James, this is the longest list you've ever sent me. And normally we manage about 15% of the normal list. And then this list is still, I'm still going down the list.
I know. I looked at it on WhatsApp myself and I said, man, this is really long.
Oh, mosquito traps.
There we go.
Right. Okay. I did read it. I was just trying to get down that far, you know.
But there's the Indian mosquito trap. I don't know if you got to that one. It was on Twitter. It's a four-step trap.
Oh, don't start me on this. We've already talked about this in the podcast.
And we did.
Yeah. I know why you've come back to it, because I dismissed it as utter garbage.
Well, the one with the sugar.
Salt, sugar, and
the tequila.
Yeah.
The wood stick, and the idea being that the mosquito eats the sugar, goes, then walks towards the tequila, gets a little tipsy, trips over the piece of wood, and bangs its head on the rock. Solved.
I think the person that actually wrote this has been through this entire experience and thought, oh, I need to get something valuable out of that experience. Let's claim it'll work for a mosquito. Highly entertaining, totally and utter. I mean, with me, it's going to be pragmatic. Is it going to work? Is it not? No.
What do you do for mosquitoes? Like, I mean, it's mosquito season.
Coffee.
What?
Coffee. Burning coffee granules.
Get out of here.
No, I'm serious. Haven't you been to various restaurants where they do that for you?
I clearly don't eat at the high-class restaurants.
Oh, no, this is low-class. That's the reason they have the mosquitoes.
Coffee grounds, either... Pre-used or fresh coffee?
It would be ideal if they were pre-used, but, you know, I'm guessing that's not what we're receiving. And then what they do is either, if they have the beans or kind of a coarse grind, you can light them direct. Alternatively, throw a little bit of whatever you've got, so whether that be lighter fluid or anything else, or also shisha briquettes
then
pile that over the top, and you don't get anything that comes near you, including your wife actually at that moment, which is kind of useful at times. So yes,
coffee grounds. So
yeah,
I'm just thinking of this because I have the morning espresso every day.
Yes,
and when I hit my whatever you call the thing where you put your coffee grounds.
Yeah.
When I hit it after to get it out, it comes out in a solid clump.
Yeah.
So I could burn that.
Yes, exactly. So dry it first and then away you go. But you do need something to help the process along, unless you've got it absolutely bang on. But it does work. It really works. And without a doubt, I mean, you do get a little bit of a strong smell alongside it.
Well, there are places where they burn dung. I've been to that in places like Tanzania and Kenya and whatever.
In the restaurant.
Right outside the restaurant.
That's quite brave.
A heap of dung burning. Yeah.
Come smell our dung. Yeah, that's got to work, hasn't it?
Yeah. Dungaree.
Dungaree. That's brilliant.
Name the rest. What's your restaurant called? It's the Dungaree Slow Hoedown.
But there is that whole thing with restaurants, isn't there? That the weirder and wackier, the better. So yes, our dung restaurants, Dungarees.
One of the interesting things I came across with getting rid of mosquitoes is citronella and all that stuff.
Yeah, it
smells nice. Doesn't do anything.
I'm not hugely surprised. The other thing that doesn't do anything, here's for all of you people that are requesting this constantly, is fogging.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, when you see, obviously it's something that would normally be done within commercial environments or you know, general neighborhoods. When they fog and you're, oh, hallelujah, the big cloud of smoke. Oh, yes, well, no problems now. Do you know how long that actually lasts for?
What, half an hour?
20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Yeah, unless if there is, so it will obliterate everything that is there at that moment.
All flying insects gone.
Yes, yes. Actually, it turns out that somebody in the ranches has beehives.
Oh.
Yeah, totally, totally not allowed, but they have beehives, all of which were obliterated by, and you know, looking for sympathy. I'm like, put a beehive in a...
Beehives in the back of your villa. Yeah.
So, there we go. And as a result of that, it will obliterate, but the there are so many sources of water around and about that it just literally 20 minutes later it is repopulated.
There are these mechanical tools that use carbon dioxide.
Yes, they work
yeah,
but they're so expensive. Yeah. And also you've got the ongoing cost because it actually operates off compressed carbon dioxide cylinders, right, which aren't the cheapest, no, as it turns out. You'd have thought, right, so you pull a bit of carbon dioxide from the air, you then shove it in a bottle, and all of a sudden you want 120 dirhams for a little effort. Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll pay that. Turns out I did. I did pay that. Bubble bro.
Oh, okay.
And then it turns out that the bubbles, I'm not joking, the bubbles aren't the right size. And on that basis, I'm still buying club soda for a certain person. Because bubbles are not the right size, James.
Hold on. You went and got the carbon dioxide cylinder canisters to make your own soda.
Well, no. It was a present initially.
Okay. It was a present to make your own soda. And the complaint is that the carbonated bubbles are too small or too big.
Do you know, I was in such shock, I don't know whether it was that they're too small or too big.
Yeah.
What I got was, they're wrong.
All right.
Yeah, that's exactly my... I mean,
and you're holding it up and you're going, what are you talking about here?
It was literally one of those moments where I'm just, I can't even respond to this with anything that has any sense whatsoever. And I'm sure all of you out there that are married are used to this scenario where you're like, okay, if I wade into this one, it could have repercussions.
Yeah.
So let's just leave it alone and find something that's a higher priority than the size of bubbles in carbonated water.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. So it's still underneath. But the problem was, at that point, you kind of get that little minor fascination going, these are really wrong, these bubbles. So I've never drunk carbonated water in my life, but then I started drinking it. I was like, no, these are absolutely fine, absolutely fine. And then it runs out, that first bottle.
Right.
Right. And you're at that moment of either this is now totally and utterly useless, or alternatively, I've got to buy a refill cartridge of this particular brand.
Yeah.
And it was at that moment that I realized that, honestly, these guys must be millionaires. But I had an option. I either throw away this machine that's just arrived as a present, or I get another bottle. But the problem was, so I bought the bottle, but I was so offended by the price of the bottle and the refill that I haven't actually used it since. Because every time I press that button, I'm thinking 5 dirhams, 10 dirhams, 15 dirhams. And so on that basis, I have stopped drinking carbonated water. And that was probably about 2.5 years ago.
Oh, man. We're drinking carbonated water. We drink the Alain brand sparkling water. It's not cheapest stuff in the world. Comes in glass bottles, which I'm thinking the glass bottle's worth more than the contents. But
it does come in glass bottles. Yeah, so I wish people would revert back to that, you know.
Yeah.
Much more easy on the recycling side.
There was a whole discussion this morning on BBC talking about plastics and plastic recycling and et cetera. And they were saying, you know, people talk about, I'm going to reduce my plastics. It's near impossible because they're everywhere and they're used for everything. Get a phone, there's plastic in that. You get a, buy a new TV, there's plastic in that. You go buy a new power tool, there's plastic in the tool, in the packaging. And it is so inexpensive to create the plastic, whereas it is so expensive to recycle the plastic.
Yeah, do you remember when we went around in Variserve?
Yes.
And we did that whole process.
Yeah. We got to do that again. We got to go back for a quick visit.
Oh, interestingly enough, I think we might be servicing their ACs at the moment. So, I really should. And they've reached out a couple of times and I missed it, which is frustrating because they're an amazing outfit.
Yeah.
But what they were basically saying is Stuart Fleming
over there at Enviroserve.
Yeah, yeah. They were saying exactly that, which was, it is just, we're right on the limits of economic value.
Yeah.
By the time that you've created, or the energy has been used to actually, recycle the plastics themselves. But also the problem is, unless you separate the colours extremely well, then the end product is virtually valueless.
Yeah.
So very difficult.
So it's the entire life cycle of the product line that we got to think about when we start thinking, which is crazy.
And I wish Tesla had done that as well.
Let's not even go there.
Yeah, let's not.
On that note, let's dive into some DIY stuff.
Cool, where are we going?
Well, we're going to start off with having a regular service routine and getting things around your place serviced, your AC, et cetera, and examining things versus, I'm just going to wait until it breaks. The wait and break scenario versus the preventative maintenance scenario. Pros, cons, why we do it, why we don't do it. And I know why we don't do it. Costs a lot of money.
Yeah, it does. See, this is a really interesting one because we were kind of just discussing this a couple of weeks ago about how can we kind of approach those people that have the, and it's a very understandable position, which is, it's not broke. So on that basis, why would I get somebody in?
Yeah.
And if you imagine the current scenario where there is loads of inflationary pressure on lots of the things that families are spending, so therefore they think of maintenance work as something that is optional. And I absolutely get that. But the problem is that there are so many hidden costs that you are simply not aware of. And a really good case in point is ACs.
Mm.
From the day that your ACs are serviced, the filters are starting to get blocked, both internally and also on the roof.
From the day.
Whether you use it or not, sand is getting on your roof for a split AC, which is the majority of the units here.
Just a real quick discussion here. Split AC versus not split.
Okay, so split AC basically has two parts, an indoor unit and an outdoor unit. The logic is that the heat goes from the indoor unit to the outdoor unit and is expelled. We've all seen those AC units with the fan that's basically pushing that hot air into the atmosphere. The other main option is called chilled water. And most high-rise apartments within Dubai have chilled water.
Mm.
And what happens there is there's a separate building. Actually, we've got one just across the way from us here, which for some reason I can't see. Oh, yeah, I've just got the edge of it. And those are enormous buildings that, in effect, do an identical thing. So what they do in that instance is they cool water, and there are enormous fans on the top of the building. You actually often see the cloud that is produced as a result.
It's called Empower, the company that does
it. One of them. Yeah, there's a number. And basically, that's getting rid of that hot air, which then it pumps the cold water that results to all the buildings that are using it. Okay, and on that, the cold water comes into the property, gets distributed to each of the indoor AC units, and creates that cooling.
Okay.
The warmer water that's left goes back to the building, gets cooled, and away you go.
How cold do they make the water, these units?
Normally about 4 degrees. It's really cold, and it has to be insulated from that side of things. So that's that. Anyway, the split ones are kind of easier to think about. So for those, when it is on the roof, it doesn't matter whether you're using it or not. It's getting sand into it, and it's getting dirty from the day that it's been cleaned.
Mm.
So on that basis, as you use it more and more, the filters get more blocked, but you're still saying to the indoor unit, I want 23 degrees, let's say. So what's actually happening is, as the time progresses from when that unit was serviced, the unit is having to work harder and harder and harder to produce that same level of cooling, because it's not as efficient as it gets more and more blocked. Okay.
Gotcha.
So imagine that scenario. If it is getting more and more blocked, then it means the compressor has to work harder. It means that the same volume of air is not going through the outside condenser coil. So therefore, the fan has to work harder to pull everything through. And as a result, and the same on the indoor unit, exactly the same scenario, it means you're using more DEWA.
Right, okay. More electricity.
Now, everyone at home is going, well, if I'm using more DEWA, then yeah, that might be costing me more, but getting them serviced costs me more as well. Well, as a rough guide, 6 months after an AC has been serviced, it will use 25% more DEWA after 6 months.
Well, hold on. Say this again.
So after 6 months from an AC, a split AC being serviced, it will use 25% more DEWA than it was doing on the day it was serviced.
25% in 6 months.
Exactly. So think about your DEWA bill and think about the electrical aspect, which for us here with all the ACs is by far and away the largest constituent. 25%.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So then when you think about that and then the cost-benefit ratio of actually getting your unit serviced and getting that reliability into your unit, then at that point, it actually is economic to look after your ACs. So it makes total sense. The other thing that that you must think about is if your ACs are working harder, you are going to have more failures and more frequent failures without a doubt.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is, if you're in a situation where you're waiting for it to break, you can guarantee it's going to break when you may need it most.
Oh, when it's the hottest out,
yeah.
When it's the most humid day of the year, that's when it's going to fail. And your better half is going to be looking at you going, didn't we get this serviced?
Yeah. Now, the other side of that is, on that hottest day of the year, any company that is any good, any maintenance company that's any good, will be at that busiest. So they're probably not going to be available to you on the speed that you need to get that AC fixed. So then you go, right, well, I've got to find an outfit today that's available. And you ring around, and eventually on about the eighth time, you find a company that can come today.
You're going to get the worst service.
There's a reason why they're available. You know, if you imagine from us as maintenance providers, our aim is to get to a midpoint whereby we can employ all of our staff through the whole year. So you find a midpoint and you're like, okay, we can just about handle that additional capacity by getting the guys as efficient as we possibly can, but we work to a midpoint. Okay, if you have a company that has too much provision of service, they are right on the cusp of profitability because we're a really tight margin industry, so therefore you can kind of guarantee that they are cutting corners because they have to. They don't have an option otherwise.
And in this
so
world,
you could be in trouble.
In this world, cutting corners means eventually your service will stop and you're going to be complaining and it's going to be, oh, they just did a bodge job.
They disappeared.
Yeah.
That's the normal one. They'll change your phone number and away they go.
What's to stop someone like me? Because you've just said 6 months after I've got servicing, you can be pretty sure that I'm going to have a 25% reduction in the quality of my working device. You know, the cooling of it is going to, if it's AC.
It will. Well, it's interesting because to you inside, it's still producing 23 right. degrees.
But
it's just having to work so much harder to do that.
So what's to stop me from climbing up on my roof, bringing up my hose, and just, you know, every couple of weeks, every month, just giving a hose down of the unit to get the dirt and grud and crime and grime and stuff out of the fins that cool. You know, it's kind of like a radiator. When you look at the front of your car, radiator, and who doesn't hose down that with their hose?
Well then, James. So, I'm sure in everybody's lifetime, they have heard about the combination of power and water and the danger for that. But that's within a domestic environment, which is 240 volts. Three-phase, which is the majority of the units that you're dealing with, works at a much higher voltage. And to give you an idea, the kick or the hit that you would get if you're electrocuted from three-phase is enough to kill you easily. With single-phase, 240 volts, it's enough to get your attention and properly upset you. It could also kill you, but that's rarer than it is with three-phase. So therefore, I know of people who have, and these were actually, they weren't guys that worked for us, but we've known of other companies where the electrician has electrocuted themselves and died. They've been thrown off the roof by the power of the electrocution and they died.
But I could turn off the power to my AC units. Would that be okay?
If you turn off the power to your AC units, then technically it's okay.
But right. It seems However, to me there's the but.
Well, the isolators that are on your roof are have been there for quite a while. You know, in your case, that could well be 22 years.
Yeah.
For mine, when I moved in, it was 16 years. And so the first thing I did was, they're not waterproof anymore, replace the lot. But most people wouldn't do that. Most people have got 16-year-old isolators because you can't see it. So you think that doesn't need to be done. And I get it. I totally get it. But then in that situation, yeah, you might have turned off the unit. But if you even splash that,
right,
best case scenario, you short out the house and you can't work out why. Worst case scenario, yeah, you've got some problems on your hands.
Okay. So you really...
It's one of those where it's just not worth scrimping on something that can kill you. It literally is that basic. And over the years, you and I have talked about this numerous occasions, which is if you are trained, if you have knowledge of electrics, if you know exactly what you're doing with something like this, with a combination of electricity, water, and risk of electrocution, then yeah, you yourself can do that. But in which case, you probably are 2-3 steps ahead of us anyway, right, in terms of this type of discussion. We're talking about the general public, and it's very clear that for the general public, don't even go there. The risk of doing yourself a major injury is dramatic.
So just get your servicing pre-season, post-season, be done with it.
Yeah.
And it's over.
Absolutely. Really key.
And keep things clean. I think that's the other key thing. Keep it clean.
Efficient makes sense from every perspective. And, you know, that's the thing that we try and stress with, you know, we're doing remarkably well with our essential maintenance, annual maintenance contract. So 3 times a year, we will come and service the units. And
every time, that's good.
Yeah, standard. I mean, if it's commercial.
Every 4 months.
If it's commercial, we make it 4 times a year because those ACs stay on through the night most of the time. So, but that's a standard. Now, if you imagine, one of the problems that we have is we call up, say, oh, right, your scheduled servicing is due. Oh, no, not now. We're busy. Can we do it in a month or two?
Yeah.
And we kind of say, well, we'll give you a 2-week window, either earlier or later. So we call them 2 weeks ahead. And the reason for that is not us being a pain in the neck. It is because we need to maintain that reliability of those units. And to be able to do that, they have to stay efficiently serviced, which is when we allow like a 2-week window, so a 1 month period in terms of flexibility for those bookings to be made.
And that's the problem, isn't it? And I come up against this all the time. It's like, yeah, I gotta get these things serviced, but I'm not going to be home, and then I got this, and you know, weekends aren't good because, and I, you know, I got a litany of reasons I can't get them serviced, but they need to be serviced.
Yeah, well, I think within a month most people can find a slot. Yeah. And we can book ahead at any point. We've got a really advanced booking system. So it's something that I stress to my guys to not get off that phone until you've got a confirmed time. And also the threat of losing. So in that situation, we want to work with our customers. But what you find is if you give them an out, they will take it without a doubt, and away they will go. So initially we thought about, right, okay, well, what if we say to them, well, if you don't make it within that month period, then you'll lose it. Okay, yes, no problem, I'll lose it. Let's wait for the next one. Okay. No, we don't want that, because for your own benefit, we want to keep those units reliable.
Well, sure. And then if it's an annual maintenance issue and they haven't cleaned it, do you have a rider that says, well, you didn't follow the cleaning protocol, so if it breaks, it's on you.
That's where we had to go.
Yeah.
And it's the only way that these are paying customers. These are people who've paid us a lot of money to do the servicing. But, you know, there's an added aspect to that for us. We had this discussion with some of the new guys saying, surely you just don't want to, you know, you can not do the work and get paid for it. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Part of our duty of care is to make sure that we're looking after those units the best of our abilities on behalf of our customers that don't understand sometimes.
They must be shocked because, as you
it's
said,
it's really required. Yeah.
As you said, you know, don't do the work. We're still paying you. We've already paid. So what's the big deal?
I have a weekly update meeting where they have to explain any backlog that hasn't been done to me. And even if there is the conversations of the customer is not contactable, then at that point we go around the property.
Okay.
And that's to physically face-to-face schedule that booking. Because I do not want to be in a situation where we haven't done the work that we are contracted to do and keep those units reliable.
Oh, man, that's a great... That's
needs to be.
Everyone needs to do that, yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Water heaters, plumbing pipes, outlets, all things again. You got 3 different things there.
Yeah, well, in effect, it's all about water leakage and the effect of that.
Yeah.
So let's imagine the start of that, which often is, I've got a little patch on my ceiling that's about 3 inches wide, and it looks the same as it did last week. So on that basis, I don't need to do anything about it. Yeah. okay, no. When has there ever been a scenario where that's going to get better? It just doesn't. It really doesn't. So let's imagine the absolute best case scenario, which is condensation on the pipe. If there's condensation on the pipe, it isn't going away. So on that basis, you're going to end up with mold. So you need to get in the ceiling to work out what is causing that, fix it, and then repaint. Also, mold within a room, as we all know, is not a good thing from a from a health perspective. So you really need to deal with that without a doubt. Water heaters. Okay, so if you have a ceiling leak, by the time it is leaking enough to get through the ceiling and to show you anything on that
that's
ceiling,
a lot of water has leaked.
You are really close to catastrophic disaster, without a doubt. And it's the same with outlets. If any outlets, toilet sprays, they shut off as they're often known here.
Oh, man. I've just stopped using them. I've just taken them all off and closed. I just don't use the taps. I just got tired of it.
I will only use Grohe if we're installing as a company. If they need it, we had just had a conversation actually with the customer service team last week, which was, but the original is this. So what do I do there when they want to match the original? To which I say, okay, they've got two options. Either install Grohe, which I will warrant. Alternatively, if you want the OEM to go back in there, absolutely fine. We'll supply that to them, but they sign a disclaimer. So it's not our liability if that fails. Because I have seen most of these are designed for 1 to 2 bar and they're operating at 6 to 7 bar.
Yeah.
So in that situation, you know, it's 4 times what they're designed to operate at. So of course they're going to fail, and they're going to fail over a short period. And when they fail, it is catastrophic.
And you want to hope you're home when they fail, because at least then Dan has that story where at least he saw the water starting to flow down the stairs so he could go and isolate it. Still had tons of damage, but at least he was home. You're not home. You've got the other story. Person wasn't home.
Yeah, Jumeirah Islands.
Destroyed their house.
Oh, God, it's $250,000 plus to put that right. And we literally went there, and it was at the stage where we were 6 weeks out. The water had been isolated after a week, which was seen when the neighbor saw the water going down the driveway. And it turned out that it was from the master bedroom, which was the furthest down the corridor upstairs. And all the doors were open. They'd done really well in terms of venting it, but it meant the black mold was in every single room, all the way down the staircase, out the front door, under the front door, down the driveway. So it was catastrophic, and that was literally a 50 dirham error that caused all of that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
One of the things that I always like to pick your brain with, tap you for this time of year, is working in the heat. Because a lot of folks are going to get out, they're going to be mowing their lawns, trimming trees, doing things. It is getting warm. And one of the last things we think about is hydration. Well, you got guys up on roofs right now doing AC stuff, etc. It's hot. So what's your hydration policy? How do you keep your guys from getting dehydrated and getting ill?
Fascinating scenario, this, that Dan and I worked out kind of a year or two into the business back, 2010-ish, I guess. We realized that our guys were, even though they are AC techs, are not educated on hydration.
Which I don't get that.
I don't get that.
I mean, isn't that a part of any training course and as a tradesman?
So. No. Which is crazy. So we've literally taken that on ourselves.
Okay.
So we do it in a number of different ways. We have the buddy system that's the absolute facet of that, which is if you're working within a hot environment, you don't get longer than 2 minutes where you are on your own. So sometimes you need to go back to a van, and that's practical. So we need to work with that. The second is hydration salts. They're provided to all staff. Actually, in our meeting 2 weeks ago, I literally called out the whole team because they had yet to request the hydration salts that have been available for months.
And this is another one of the problems when we talk hydration is temperatures slowly go up. So you don't realize it. Yeah, you're getting a little more sweaty, but you got great shirts. They're wicking away the moisture.
Yeah.
And by the time it's hitting peak temperatures, you've kind of acclimatized to it. You just don't think about it until you're wondering at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, why am I so tired and punchy and what's going on?
Well, if you've been on a roof for 6 hours at that point, your is a safety issue.
Yeah.
And sometimes we've had, I think, two scenarios in our 15 years where we haven't been able to get somebody off a roof.
Wow.
And that's when it gets very scary. And then it's full ambulance. and the buddy system has failed. But so we've talked about hydration salts are absolutely key because you sweat, obviously, the salts
as
well as
these days. I mean, and there's all sorts of different products out there that taste good, that aren't full of sugars and all sorts of other stuff. It's amazing. Yeah. It's a full industry that's just blown up.
Absolutely.
The Gatorade guys must be going, oh, these are eating into my business.
And the other thing that we do is we produce industrial quantities of ice. Right. I mean, to give you an idea, it's 3/4 of a ton a day that we produce. And that is there for every single team. And we don't want to regulate it. So however much you want, you can take. And it is there to literally keep water cold. It is there for if they just need to use pressure points to just cool down quickly, it will work for them like that as well. So over the years, that has grown from a small machine to two industrial units that are brilliant at doing what we need.
And are you still using your in-house water purification system?
Yes, absolutely. That's all there.
You still play with that?
Actually, a different purification system. We've streamlined it. The hobby one was ridiculously expensive and less efficient than the much smaller units that that are there. Great company, Everpure. Actually, there's another one. We were talking just earlier on this podcast about plastics and recycling, that kind of thing. And now it must be 18 months since I moved over from bottled water to a unit that goes under the sink made by Everpure in the US. Which is just a really high-tech cartridge that connects into my cold water line, and we now use that for all of our needs. It works brilliantly. So we have, for Natalie, obviously there was no agreement at the time when I got it. Uh-huh. So Natalie uses a big jug that's kept in the fridge for her needs and for the kids' water in the morning. I have the same machine, which I had beforehand, which was a bottom fill. And I use the one container, put it under the kitchen sink, and fill it every week. So that way I'm on the same bottle that's just been recycled and recycled. So it was just practical for us. It was a better way of operating. It just so happens that it's more eco-friendly as well. But I think that's the best way with eco-friendly stuff. It's got to work better for you to be effective and to be adopted. And this does for us.
Or there's no buy-in.
Yeah.
So you got the buddy system, you've got the hydration salts. What else are you guys doing?
So we've also, we touched on it, but clothing is another really important one. So we've been using the same Wickaway tops for a long, long time, and they are really effective as well. We have wide brims that are designed to fit over hard hats.
Oh.
That's quite something. So what it is over the hard hat, you've got a wide brim around. It looks a bit like a donut at the front. And then on the back, it extends. So that way it completely covers the neck as well, which is really useful. We also have umbrellas. So beach umbrellas that we buy 50 at a time. They last a year, which for us is pretty good going. And those are great just to give the guys some extra shade whilst they're working. And if you imagine, these are guys that are sat on a roof for at least 4 hours a day.
And they are wearing pants. They are wearing, you know, steel-toed boots. Oh, absolutely. So they got socks and all this stuff on. Yep.
And
maybe gloves.
Up and down ladders in that environment. I did it. The last time I actually did anything like that was probably now. Oh, you know what? We're talking a decade ago. So at that point, I would have been 37. Okay. Not ridiculously unfit. And after 20 minutes, my vision started to go inwards, the first sign of dehydration. And luckily, I knew there and then I've got to get off this roof right now. I've been there for 25 minutes.
Man.
These guys daily are doing 4 hours plus. So really, when you combine all of that together, it is a solid policy when it's adhered to. We just need to make sure they adhere to it as a process. And that way, we keep everybody as safe as we can. And thank goodness, outside of two incidents, which every time we have a standard policy for accidents and incidents that all have to be reported, reviewed, and that review is with me directly, then it means that hopefully we learn from the errors that we make.
Nice. You know, the other thing that starts going on this time of year is people start thinking about their power tool collection and their yard tool collection. And there are a lot of electrical things, drills, hedge trimmers, you know, grinders. And the big question that keeps coming back, do I go cordless or do I go with the cord?
That's an obvious answer, James. You obviously do both.
You need both.
Yeah. So.
now we're getting an outlay here.
Yeah, there is, but there isn't. Okay. You work practically with it.
It's all in. So I need to have cordless and corded tools.
Only, in my opinion, only for a drill.
Okay, that's so the drill thing. Is the one you need both?
Yes.
And then what about the rest?
Everything else, I go corded.
Okay.
Personally, because I want the power.
Yeah.
And for the inconvenience, because I'm not going to use them that often. And also, I've got a whacking great extension cable. Oh, and more and more and more. So I can get to 100 meters on extensions if I really had to, as long as I don't have too much power requirement. So for me, the reason why you, for a drill alone, is that you go corded and cordless, is they are used for very different applications in very different locations.
Okay.
So we talk time and time again about the best options in terms of cordless drills. Now, the reality of that is the best option is a Makita.
Always? I mean, there's...
Almost always.
There's DeWalt, Black &
Decker. Yeah, DeWalt, Black & Decker are pretty much the same. Ryobi doesn't have the same level of support here, but in Australia it does.
I saw a wonderful side note here. Instagram piece with some construction guys, and some dude comes in with his Ryobi stuff, and they were just making fun of him, saying, you got your kids here with you?
Well, no, the Ryobi stuff works, but in my opinion, you need to go with the brand that it works locally, so they have the infrastructure and the spare parts if you need them. And here it is Makita.
I think now, worldwide, I don't know anyone who won't default to a Makita product.
The problem is, there's Hilti as well, and my dad, you'll never get him off Hilti.
I only thought of Hilti as the Hilti gun for the nail stud driver.
No.
The only thing I ever used a Hilti for.
No, their drills are
really
exceptional.
Never used a Hilti drill.
I would say it's probably better, and especially for the powered stuff, it's probably better than the Makita. But again, you're buying at a price point, and they are really expensive for what they are. So people will tend to move down in grade in that respect, so, which is kind of where I am, I guess. So if you imagine for us, we don't get to buy one drill at a time. We have to buy 10, 15, 20, just depends, you know, however many we need at that time. So in that situation, I have to find a really effective, cost-effective drill that will last, which is where we've kind of, over the years, we've worked our way through a huge number of brands and drills to get to something that will give us the longevity that we need. So right now, we are currently using the Black & Decker 700 watt that I mentioned to you for corded.
Mm-hmm.
And we are using a Stanley lithium ion 18 volt hammer action for the battery powered drills.
And who's making the Stanleys? Is that made by Stanley or is it?
It is made. Oh, who is the company that's got that one? Is it not Makita? Who's got that one? Oh, darn it. I can't remember.
Right, I'll come to you.
Yeah, no, maybe. But they're, you know, that particular drill is very good. However, I won't touch their corded stuff.
Oh.
It's just not right.
Yeah.
However, the Black & Decker DeWalt is the highest range of from the Black & Decker brand.
Mm.
I find that high-level Black & Decker is very, very good for domestic application. And cheaper on the whole than the equivalent for many other brands. But again, you need to know what you're looking at. So that's really where the key sits there. I mean, I've had a Black & Decker a drill with a traditional lead NiCad battery, in effect, that I've had for 10 or 15 years. And I've got that many batteries for it that even though the battery life is pretty low now, I can still use it without too many problems whatsoever.
Some research that I've just done.
Ooh, okay.
Courtesy of the Bloke Cave in the UK. And they say the Stanley Fatmax power tools are made by Black & Decker.
Oh, okay. So that way it is, that's the range, the three ranges that they have. So below Black & Decker, they would consider Stanley, I think. So one other one that we're talking about here and how they try and suck you in.
Suck you in. There we go.
So it is when they provide the range of cordless tools in one package together
with
the battery normally that you need to buy separately.
Oh.
So they bring the price point down and give you one battery for five tools.
Yeah, you're done for.
You're absolutely done for in that situation.
You need at least two, maybe three.
Oh, yeah. Okay, completely. I think two normally is enough. With the fast charging that's currently available, two is normally enough and it works. But again, for me, because most of the other things outside of a drill you're going to use very infrequently, that the inconvenience of an extension for the extra power and the dirt cheap price point that you get is utterly incredible.
And that's the thing, that the constant supply of power you get when you plug the thing in.
Yes, yeah. And they're strong as well. They're designed to be strong because there's more torque coming out the motors. Saying that, though, I did go through two of the angle grinders. I very rarely use an angle grinder. So I've been buying them just on, you know, now and again when they come on deal. And when I say I'm paying 69 somewhere around there for an angle grinder, yeah, that's fucking decker.
Yeah, there we go. That's a great price.
That's really, really cheap. So then I suddenly thought I had two, I think, that because I forgot I bought the first one. So obviously buy another one. You see, I'll have that. So I had two in the garage, and then I suddenly decided over the winter that we really need to redo the, what was it, like 35 meters of railings we have at the We Will Fix It head office.
35 meters?
It's all the way down the whole car park from one length to the other.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, gotcha.
And it's like every section has lots of vertical rails.
Is this a punishment for someone? If someone has, you know, stepped out of line.
They even look at me wrong.
Get out of there.
it's quite a nice, it's quite a therapeutic job when you're out there with a wire brush on the angle grinder.
You and Dan do that on your brakes, right?
Well, I wish we got a brake change, you know, it doesn't work.
If
like
you had
when
one, you'd
the
be
top.
There, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. But I killed both of them, and it took the guys 10 days to be able to do that whole area, but I killed both of them in that 10 days. Gearboxes on both.
Wow.
But then you think about that and go, okay, so they were working for 8 hours a day for 10 days in a really high-pressure environment for a 69 dirham angle grinder.
That's pretty darn good.
I'm pretty happy with that. Yeah. They were still working. They were just exceedingly noisy.
Yeah.
So we threw them away at the end of that job. And actually, that's not true. We recycled them. But same thing in a way. And but I'm very happy with that in terms of usage. And now we have bright, shiny black railings again, rather than the rusty, horrible ones that were there before.
So cordless and corded for drills, and otherwise just go with the cords because plug in.
Yeah, and you are going to have the inconvenience. You know, quite often you're working at height. The other thing for corded is if you're going into reinforced concrete, which we have a lot of here, then don't even bother going with a cordless because they just don't have the power that's required to do it. And what you find is when you try it, and even if you've got hammer action on it, the drill bit slows down to such a degree that trying to keep it nice and tight so that a roll plug will fit comfortably doesn't happen. So then you've got a loose roll plug, which means at that point, you normally will have a loose curtain rail or whatever it is that you've put in there, and it just doesn't work. So the hassle, I know, of getting the extension out, but you need to do it. There's no way around it.
Off the wall question, just a real quick one. Yeah. You guys use label makers? Are you a label maker guy?
We used to, and then Dan got into, what's the one where you put the plastic and the A4 sheet? Laminating.
Okay.
Dan's got through probably about four or five laminators, and it is literally his favorite thing to do. So, we were thinking about, like, in fact, we've definitely had label makers in the past, but
they were a real fad for a while, and I know they still sell them, but...
Is it Dyno, which is the main...
Yeah, Dymo. Dymo, and there's another one as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, we had those, and I think they were useful at the time, but I can't remember. I think I've bought one quite recently for the office, but I can't think of anything that's got labeled, you know?
It's in the drawer with the stationery area, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know where that went.
You know, when you go back to the office, you're going to walk around and just say, where do we put these labels? Yeah. And you're going to see them everywhere and realize, okay, they're just a part of life.
Yes. Here's another one for this week. We bought a new photocopier.
Oh.
That's quite momentous in our lives.
Those have really gone in crazy directions. So what kind of photocopier did you get?
We got a Konica Minolta C759E. right? Now, that means nothing to anybody.
Yeah, everyone's going, yeah. Lost me at the...
Okay. Do you know how much photocopiers actually cost these days?
I have no idea.
Okay. If you're buying...
Like, this is the standalone giant thing that's in the corner.
Yeah. Okay. But there's different grades, and we need super heavy duty.
Okay.
So it's everybody in our office has the main one. I've got one in my office, then we've got another one in finance as well. But the main one for the main office needs to be an absolute beast.
Yeah.
Okay. It's more, if I bought it new, it's more than 100,000 dirhams.
Get out of here.
No, seriously.
Wow.
Yeah, that was basically, well, no, that was a much more, less offensive response than I gave when that was quoted, okay? So, obviously, at that point, I'm going, A, I'm definitely going secondhand.
Yeah.
But secondly, I've realized that actually on this kind of money, I have to learn about photocopiers.
Yeah.
Okay. So originally I bought all of our photocopiers in various different ways, all extremely secondhand, and most of them have done quite well. But we got to the stage where the repair guy was coming on a pretty much weekly basis for one of them. And then when I looked at all the consumables, it was everything was almost on zero. And equally, when I looked at the replacement costs for it, and it's not just, we're not talking ink, we're talking imaging units.
Sure.
And various other weird things. And
there's all sorts
like
of little pulleys and elastics and drivetrains, and they all go.
Well, to get even the basics, before I got any of the consumables, I was on for about 9,000 dirhams to get this all sorted. And that's me sourcing it, not the repair guy, so he's at like a 30, 40% margin. So at that point, I thought I'd have a look and see what's possible. Now, it turns out that there is a whole industry in secondhand photocopiers because most of the big multinationals buy them on contract.
Ah.
So they only have them for like a couple of years, and then they get sold off by the container load. And obviously, being Dubai, those containers arrive here. So we basically got quoted 12,500 for the replacement unit. And they wouldn't touch our old one as a trade-in against it because it did still work. It was just, you know, fairly old. So then we got to the stage of, right, okay, let's work out some negotiation here. So we got to last price at 10.
Okay.
Then somebody broke ranks from the other suppliers and offered us 8,000. Then you've got to go to, what's your copy like? What's all of these elements that were dead on the other one? What's that looking like? And we got to the stage in the end where, not only do we manage to get a really, really good low copies machine for 8,000, we managed to find a separate outfit that specializes in refurbing all the units to buy the old one. So in the end, 6,000 net, and we've got ourselves an absolute spanky new photocopier.
So with the 6,000 net photocopier, what's the yearly cost to run one of these things with repairs?
Not a clue.
Okay.
Let's
but on your old ones, what do you think you were with repairs?
I reckon we're still like a 3,000 or 4,000 a year, that kind of level.
I mean that, but you're riding that thing hard.
Oh, it gets ridden really hard.
Okay, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, it is. But you don't think about these costs when you're setting up a business and the utter curveballs that come your way. You know, but I've now, over the years, we've kind of worked out, and this is kind of the conduit to power tools, which is, it is not always the most expensive option that is the right one for you. But equally, if you go for the bottom and cheapest option, you're going to be in trouble as well.
Yeah.
But what you therefore need to do is invest in time and get the knowledge. And that goes for DIY and everything that is done in life. If you want to get something that is great value. And value is totally different from a price discussion. And that was kind of a very long-winded illustration of that.
And on that note, Colin Thomas, Essential Maintenance, and We Will Fix It Dubai. Thank you very much. This was a lot of fun. Let's do it all again really, really soon. Colin, thank you.